Hi there, folks. You're listening to the A Minute to Midnight show, and my name is Tony. On the show today, I have a first-time guest, James Musker, and it's an extremely interesting discussion about the global religion. You can find all of our videos and shows on our website, aminutetomidnight.com, YouTube and iTunes. And we do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations. I want to say thank you to people that help us. We really can't do this without your help, and you can donate on our website. I want to offer a very warm welcome to James Musker from England to the A Minute to Midnight show. We have not had James on the show before. It's great to be talking to you, James. In fact, it's good to be talking to someone who isn't in New Zealand or in the United States of America for a change.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and I've been actually really looking forward to doing this, because you've written a book called The New World Religion and the Beliefs of the Elite, and you sent me a PDF copy of it, and I have to say I'm super impressed with it. It's a very well-compiled book, and it's what I really like about it is that you've written it in a way that's easy for people to understand, and it kind of makes easy reading, where some of these types of books are incredibly technical. Yours is kind of, I don't know, I think it's just an easy book to read. So we'll get into discussing the book. In fact, I'd like to actually end up buying a hard copy of it, because it's great on a PDF, but I'd really like to have the paperback. So maybe you could give our listeners a bit of a background into who you are and how you ended up writing this book.
Yes, well, I was brought up in the home counties in England, and I had a very good upbringing, and I went to university initially studying economics, but felt that that was pretty boring, and then went off to study theology, and that was a subject that I was very keen on, and I took that to quite a high degree. I got a degree in that and also a further diploma. So I studied Hebrew, Aramaic, a bit of Greek. And so I started to write the book, The New World Religion and the Beliefs of the Elite, because I noticed that there was a gaping gap on what I felt was the most important part of the rollout of the New World Order. How are they going to manage to bring all of society into their managed sort of construct, their new Masonic society? So I read everything I possibly could about the New World Religion, and typically a New World Order book might have one chapter on it. So you end up reading quite a lot of books explaining different aspects of it. And obviously you can see what's going on today as a result of 9/11. So yeah, I very much studied it, and decided to write the book because there was a big piece missing, I thought, in the sort of jigsaw puzzle of the overall situation.
And I think you've hit it on a nail on the head there, and I agree. There is kind of more stuff around on the other aspects of it, not so much about the whole religious aspect of it. And just looking at page 3 in your preface, when you basically say the overall picture is also corroborated and mentioned in the writings and the beliefs of Luciferians such as Albert Pike, Madame Blavatsky and Alice Bailey, who make numerous references to the eventual collapse and destruction of Christianity to be replaced by the New World Religion. So immediately you had that, and it caught my attention. I think, aha, this guy is on the right wavelength that I'm going to get something with, you know, in common, because I also have really felt that those people are key.
Yes, that's right. They're coming at this New World Religion from completely the opposite angle as the Bible. But what's quite interesting is that they do kind of coincide. So Satan is going to do the reverse. He's going to say the reverse. And Alice Bailey, and typically books such as The Externalization of the Hierarchy, which is one of her theosophy books. She was a theosophist, believing in the ascended masters and the emanation and some of those ideas which we might look at. She had a very big impact upon the United Nations, and it's all there actually within those writings. They're terribly difficult to read. And also, you go through them, a lot of them don't actually make that much sense. it's very dense reading that makes. But yeah, it is corroborated from the opposite angle in those writings of the Luciferians.
The thing is with Alice Bailey too, I think a lot of it is written in a way that only the initiated are supposed to understand. So it does make it more difficult for other people. But you can certainly find bits in it which you go, aha, that explains it very clearly where the beliefs are. And, I've sort of quoted from Bailey quite a bit in various shows and things I've done. And Albert Pike, I think, is the same. I mean, his writings are just like gibberish almost. But certain bits of it you can go, aha, that's where they're really coming from.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm not sure whether he really did write that quote about the Third World War and the Third World War concepts. Yeah,
I believe I studied into that, and I've pretty much, in my own mind, I've debunked it. I don't believe that Albert Pike ever wrote any letters about the three world wars, and I've wrote an article on it some time back. That was just part of a hoax. Taxil hoax. It's been elaborated, and then William Guy Carr took it to another level in the 1950s. There's no reference to Third World Wars before William Guy Carr wrote in the 1950s, which of course is already after the First and Second World War. But Albert Pike was definitely a Luciferian. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Pretty dreadful guy.
I would say so. Yes. Yep. So this says then on page 4, it says, this is not just a Christian book on theology and conspiracy, but a book explaining the entire religious agenda and the beliefs of the elite and much more. So maybe, could you elaborate a little bit on sort of how you tie the things together like that?
Yes, well, I wanted the book to have a wide appeal because I didn't want it necessarily to be 100% a Christian book, because I feel that some people, that's a bit of a turn off to them, and that this information is important enough that even if you're a secular humanist or not caring or an atheist about anything to do with religion and Christianity, that you can still access this book. There are some religious concepts within it, but I want it to have a broad appeal so that you can see what is the strategy behind all the religions going on today. Because it's easy to work out the economic and the political situation. That's pretty much completely over. The game is pretty much completely over in terms of us as the man on the street making any inroads into what's going on in society and the direction that we're going in general. But the New World Religion is something that people should know about whatever belief you have. So I tried to make it accessible to everyone. There are some religious concepts in there. I slightly apologize about that. But my point is that, pick up the book, read it, and you can work it out. And it's quite evangelical in places as well, because it's one of these books that proves that the Luciferians are coming at it from this angle. Christianity is coming at it from totally the opposite angle. And guess which one is, correct? At every single step, the theosophy, like Alice Bailey, their writings are coming at it from, they're misinterpreting, and they've got a twisted commentary. And so, you just be honest to yourself. You can see that twisted commentary is actually directly in line with the state. And I'm quite anti the state being involved in telling us what to do and what all of that stuff. So it might be a book that would appeal to, any secular humanist as well.
But it'll also appeal to Christians too, because you do mention that stuff in there, which is important. You mentioned the Great Tribulation and things which are coming. And I agree about the state controlling us, and boy, we are seeing an increase in censorship. That's really starting to happen, the clamping down and things, and I've been affected by it, and it's affecting more and more Christians, and probably not just Christians, but I think we're the number one target.
Yes, that's right, and it's the sort of rise of this extraordinary hate speech business that you can't speak. You can't say Jesus is the way, the truth, because then it's exclusive, excluding all the other religions. And this is the direction that they want us to go in, to syncretize all the religions. So you've got all the Protestant denominations and Catholicism all joining together via ecumenism. And then once that is basically done, so you've got the Pope bigging that up with sustainable development and some of his sayings, and what he's talking about is pretty much directly in line with renewable, the Agenda 21 and sustainable development. And also it's to do with bringing all religions in together, Christianity eventually going into Islam to form Chrislam, and Hinduism and Buddhism and other indigenous beliefs all being joined together to form this new world religion construct. That's the direction that they're going in. We can see it all over the place. And but the Pope, I mentioned, not a huge amount. That's because it's fairly obvious what's really going on. And once you can see that, you don't need someone to be telling you, you know, on and on about it. So, yeah, I cover that.
Yeah, I do notice that you said the strategy is to have Catholicism as the ecumenical center for Christianity, and make all the other, join forces with that. And so the Pope, you know, being the sort of the one man at the head of Catholicism, it makes it easier to sort of bring everyone under one head, or at least that's what they think.
Yes, that's right. And they think that religions are the source of all of the violence and the problems today. Of course, it's not religions and Christianity, and it's not even, believe it or not, Islam that is the source of all of this terrorism and things going on. It's them, the cryptocracy, the hidden government at the top, that are affecting things. And this is why we've got this extraordinary construct. You've got good Islam on one side, where they're trying to convert us to Islam and saying how brilliant Islam is and it's a religion of peace. And then on the other side, you've got bad Islam. So you've got ISIS, you've got Al-Qaeda, you've got them destroying Palmyra and all of this stuff going on, many kids and all of this, so that they can bring the Hegelian dialect. You've got the synthesis and you've got the anti-synthesis creating the synthesis, the thesis rather, thesis, antithesis, creating the false conclusion, what they want to go to, and that is the new world religion, because Islam in a way is their hardest religion to break. And so that's why they've got this good and bad Islam thing going on. And if there isn't enough bad Islam going on, guess what they're doing? They're doing their hoaxes or their setups.
That's an interesting point, to actually put the Hegelian dialectic into Islam and say that they're sort of controlling both sides to do that, with the side that appears good and the side that appears to be the terrorist ones that everyone can hammer. And of course, they kind of at each other and all of that. So really, it's the cryptocracy at the top that's sort of controlling both sides of the conflict, to show everyone it doesn't work, so they have to bring in something new. So anyway, what does the word cryptocracy actually mean for those that haven't heard it?
Yeah, it's a Greek word meaning hidden government, really. They are the people who sit above our politicians. They do exist. They are real people. They run the world like a corporation, and that's what their long-term aim is to create a global corporation. They seek to control everything. They control 99% of all the politics and economics that we see today. They create the hoaxes, the economics. They control the supply of money through the Bank of International Settlements. And they are longing to bring humanity into their managed society, their Masonic society. And that's what it's all about, using these subtle techniques. And so they started the United Religions Initiative, which maybe we can look at, Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 1993, Gillian Sorensen started the United Religions Initiative and sort of recruited Bishop William Swing, who had the first meeting in 1995, which was 50 years after the start of the United Nations. On that particular day, they had a meeting, and the United Religions Initiative is seeking to get all religions together, talking and sort of coexisting together, in order to bring them into this new system. Of course, the United Religions Initiative would say that what I've just said is not really what's going on. They're just having their meetings and their coffee mornings, and that it's all very, very subtle, and that I'm overdoing it. But actually, it's not, because every time the cryptocracy set up one of these little groups, later on they can subvert it and make it go in the direction in which they want. So the United Religions Initiative is quite an important part of the rollout of the New World Religion.
That's interesting. And I actually just watched the video yesterday. It's a few months old, but I haven't watched the whole thing, but a fair chunk of it, from a Freemasonry, a big conference thing they had in Britain, at Royal Albert Hall. And right. They give it all away in terms of what the real goals are and how they counterfeit things in there. And I think if anybody is a Christian and thinks they can be a Freemason, it's like, you better think again. Because that Freemasonry is pretty much central, or the ideas of Freemasonry, with this whole uniting of everything, and that the religions are the world religions are the big problem, and they pretty much say that in that conference.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. You cannot be a Freemason and a Christian, really. And if you are a Freemason, you should write a letter to your lodge stating that you don't want to be there anymore. Please take my name off the list, because Satan is legalistic in the extreme. And if your name's still on the list, he still has a claim on you. So it's only really by, a spirit-filled encounter with Jesus Christ that you will be able to overcome all of the baggage that comes with Freemasonry. And for me, one of the interesting ones is Nimrod, because Nimrod was bad in the Bible, because in the Tower of Babel story, God comes down and scatters all the people from speaking the one language, because otherwise everything they do will be possible. Nothing they do will be impossible for them, is what it says. And so Nimrod, Freemasonry think, is good, but actually in the Bible he's bad.
Yes.
So you're dead in the first degree of Freemasonry. There's the oath of Nimrod. So you're starting off on the wrong foot already. And how much discernment have you got? If you are a Freemason and you are saying these things, maybe they're biblical, but yet they're all twisted and a bit different. And how much discernment have you really got if you're saying these extraordinary oaths about which you know very little? And when are you going to grow up and stop doing that? It's just absurd to me. Anyway.
Yeah, but of course the lower levels of Freemasonry don't really understand what the higher levels do, because only revealed a little bit at a time. But right from the word go, in those first 3 degrees, people should be able to see through it if you've got any discernment at all. And you mentioned of Nimrod, and of course the Tower of Babel was to reach to the heavens, not just get, we're not just talking a big tall tower. It goes beyond just the height of the tower. But the Freemasons are doing the same sort of thing with Jacob's ladder as well, going to heaven, getting to heaven and getting an enlightenment through Jacob's ladder, which is exactly the same concept, really, the way they view it, as Nimrod in the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, that's right. And this is where we've got this concept of emanationism, which comes from the Latin word emanare, which means to sort of pour forth, I think it is. And this concept that in Kabbalah you have it, that you go up through the Sephiroths and you go higher and higher, and eventually you can reach God and actually become God. And Freemasonry teaches the same. So just going back a step, with the Godhead, the Godhead produces a creation. The Godhead creates a lesser creation, then another lesser creation. It goes down to where we are today, and that you can go back up to God through this climbing up the degrees, or through the Sephiroths in the Kabbalah, to get back to God. So it's the same sort of evil picture, that by knowledge you can know God through doing extraordinary things and knowing secret passwords and all the rest of it. So that's all part of it. But in the EU, you've even got the picture of one of Bruegel's paintings of the Tower of Babel, which I think is a real smoking gun. Here you've got this so-called secular institution, political institution of the EU, and they've got Bruegel's painting of the Tower of Babel and all these sort of Lego people wandering around. It's in the poster. It's I do mention that, but
yeah, that is interesting. And just on page 19 in your book, it says, to the elite, their religion is Freemasonry, Luciferianism, Hermeticism, and the Kabbalah, and for the masses, it's atheism. In the future, the elite wish to replace the world's religions with their own system of beliefs. This will look a lot like a type of humanistic, pantheistic, behavioral control religion, leading to the emergence of their pure Luciferian doctrine, which is really their goal. And there, when I read that, I thought, yep, you've got it, because I fully believe that's the goal as well. I think the end time religion is not going to be something like Islam controlling the world through the mark of the beast and all that. Ultimately, Lucifer's going to want to be worshipped. And so they're setting up a Luciferian doctrine, which will be the beast system.
That's right. Yes, it says in Revelation that mankind will come to worship the beast that comes from the abyss. And the scripture is Revelations. Yeah, so this is the extraordinary situation that we have. Yeah, it's Revelation 13:8. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast. All whose names have not been written in the book of life, belonging to the Lamb that was slain from the creation of the world.
And I think that in verse 4, it says, and they will worship the dragon who gave power to the beast. So they're actually worshipping the dragon. They'll know who, you know, the Revelation tells us in other places who the dragon is, that it's Satan. So the people are going to know who they're worshipping, I believe, in the end.
That's right. That's right. And this is what we're entering into now. And I was brought up as really a nominal Christian, and I don't really have a massive problem with nominalism. And I know that some people might disagree with that, but I just feel that the society that we're entering into now, it's a post-Christian society, because nominal Christianity is sort of entirely lost its foothold as well. So we've got this situation where people are basically just poo-pooing Christianity and saying that it's not true, when they've been brought up maybe as a nominal Christian 20 years ago, and they're just turning their back on it and ridiculing Christianity in the media and just bringing Islam up, and so that people are thinking any fundamental someone who believes in the Bible in a good manner. Yeah, this is what they're trying to do, is just to knock Christianity out and replace it with their Luciferian religion, which will eventually arrive. But in order to get us there, I talk about dark green religion, which is a bit like sort of the film, the Avatar film, where you've got everything connected, and you've got the sacred tree, and you can sort of jack into the neural tree and find out what's going on elsewhere. So that concept I do mention, because I think that that'll be the way whereby they'll take us into a sort of transhumanist future, alternative intelligence and that sort of thing. So eventually, yes, Revelation, that's where it's at. It's amazing when you do begin to understand Revelation, what's really going on, and it's the culmination of Ezekiel and Zechariah and Daniel and lots of other scriptures.
Yes, that is true, and that's a very interesting concept. I just want to look back to the UN and grabbing all the world's properties. You believe that? I'll actually read a little bit straight out of your book rather than me say it. Page 15: the UN will grab all the world's property and land by making the values of the land worthless, since the license involved will become so expensive and onerous the owners will be forced to sell. Overall, this is why farmers are being slowly squeezed out of their livelihoods to give way to the large corporate agribusinesses, which is all part of the long-range plan to control the food supply. Immediately I read it, I thought back to Adam Weishaupt and the original Illuminati goals, which were then parroted by Karl Marx in the Communist Manifesto. And one of those original Illuminati goals was the abolition of private property. And you pretty much sum it up there.
Yes, I think that is what is going to happen. They are going to tax property owners. They are going to use these usufruct laws, which is mentioned in the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which is this extra document that they've tagged on to Agenda 21. And the usufruct laws, you've got the user or usus in the Latin of the property is allowed to create a return and enjoy its fruits fructus, but only according to the license which is granted by the legal owner. So it's a bit like having a leasehold and having to pay the lease every year. So it's something like that, that you have to buy a license and then renew it every year. And also they'll be taxing us into oblivion with property taxes. In addition to which, I'm a mortgage broker, so I'm always looking at interest rates and two-year fixes and five-year fixes and things like this. So I believe that interest rates will go very, very high, which will make it very difficult for people to own property. They'll literally just have to hand their keys back. But in order to, you know, there'll be some sort of new system whereby you can rent it back. All of the world's property eventually will end up in some sort of earth trust owned by the United Nations. And they'll be using the New World Religion as the kind of belief system behind this, so that people don't mind giving up their property because they're helping Mother Earth. And so they've got that aspect to bring it all in. May sound all a bit theoretical, but we are seeing more property taxes on a global basis. We are seeing interest rates at the moment in the UK and probably New Zealand, they're very low. But, you know, we may come a time probably in 10 years time where interest rates do start to go up quite considerably and people start to default. Obviously, they want to keep the global economy going as long as they can. But eventually we might go into an economy that looks a bit like Japan, where there's so much debt floating around that they're just printing more and more money, which is what they're doing anyway already.
Yeah, have a slightly different angle on that, because I don't think they do want to keep the system going indefinitely. I think they're trying to set up their alternative system now. And once that is set up, they will collapse the current system. I believe that's the goal. And I don't know how long that'll be, whether it's months, weeks, years away. I'm not sure, but I that's what I believe. I think this system was put in the way it is with a kind of a time-ticking bomb where they can kind of collapse it and it implode itself, because it's not sustainable. So that's, you know, that's where I think, and I'm kind of thinking the collapse will be deliberately triggered, but it will be deliberately triggered when they're ready to replace it.
Yes, absolutely. And they've got very good at doing this. In 2008, we had the credit crunch. And that was sold to us as being a subprime, but it wasn't anything like that. And you've got the 1929 Great Depression, and they've basically said, "Yes, we did it." I mention it. It's, you know, they control the supply of money via the Bank of International Settlements based in Basel. They meet up every odd month to discuss their policy and their interest rate goals across the globe. Only about 60 countries do go, because the ones that aren't there, they're just not big enough to be bothered, you know, for them to bother with. I think that when they're ready to crash the system, they will, and we'll have this dreadful Agenda 21, which, I mean, if you're from the left or the right and you can read that and then believe that it's not really a kind of takeover, I think you've got a problem, because the Agenda 21 is very, very important to understand, because you can see that the new economy will not be based on supply and demand. There will be a price mechanism which will include environmental costs, and that is what will be used to take us into you know, a totally different situation to how we are today. So, yeah, that's right, Tony.
Just hard to know how long it will be till it happens, because, you know, there are so many factors that are in play now that look like the collapse could happen. You know, could they even lose control of collapsing it maybe in the time frame that they want? I don't know how much total control they have over it. I'm not sure either, but they certainly have a heck of a lot of control. And you know, personally, I believe we should, in being prepared, if the collapse happened tomorrow, you know, we should be prepared for it as best as we can. And it may not happen quickly. It may be further down the track, but the point is to be actually ready when it does happen, because the future will not look like it does today when this does happen.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. So I think that just keep believing in Christ. Keep your eyes on him. A lot of these things we don't know about. The cryptocracy are, you know, they're a really nasty bunch, and they're, you know, that's an understatement. And what, you know, if they didn't exist and it really was democracy, the world would be in a lot better state than it is now. All of these fake wars and hoaxes I mentioned in 9/11, it's just a joke what's going on. It really is.
Yep. And it's interesting with 9/11, because I know you cover that in the book, and I want to just go a little bit to chapter 6, where you start talking about numbers and numerology, and numbers hidden in plain sight thrill the Freemasons, who think they're the only ones capable of reading their signs. Magic words are important and convey meaning exactly the same as numbers. Can you explain a little bit? Like, this is a big thing for me. Yeah. I kind of go through when an event happens, I start going through working out the numerology there to see what's significant, and you can usually find something, you know, tracing back to certain numbers, 33 and 13 and so forth. Maybe, because you've written a pretty good section in that book on it, perhaps you could explain a little bit to our listeners a bit about that. Numerology and gematria and so on.
Yes, that's great. Well, the secret services such as Mossad, MI5, CIA, etc., they're very keen that when they do their hoaxes or their setups, that there are these numbers there. We don't know why they do that, but it's part of their worship of Satan. We don't know why, but if you look, for example, at the Manchester bombing with Ariana Grande. I didn't really want to talk about this, but anyway, I brought it up now. you will notice that there are 22s all over it. 22 people died, and the number that were injured were 119. 119, which is 9/11, you know, backwards. The number of injured people, and not one of those injured person has come forward stating that they've had some life-changing injury. But you will notice in practically all of these hoaxes that they set up in order to manage us and get us thinking in the way that they want, you know, creating the false war on terror, you'll notice that these numbers are cropping up. And John Charles de Menez, when he gets shot, you know, he was shot 7 times and 11 bullets and 3 seconds and 33 is cropping up there. And the Phoenix rover, there are lots of 22s there. All of these things that are going on, there are these strange numbers. And so we don't really know why they're there, but they do genuinely seem to be there. And it's not because conspiracy theorists are putting them there.
Yeah.
It's because they're putting them there. I can't, you know, I had these discussion with a few friends. I'm like, oh, what, you mean to say they didn't do it? Yes, they didn't do it. And the reason why they didn't do it is because they need control. Absolute 100% control of the situation. So it's much easier for them to have a fake family saying, oh yes, he got blown up. And I don't wish to be disrespectful to the events where, you know, people do die, but this is unacceptable that these people are doing these hoaxes and that we're all believing them. When are we going to wake up and start to see that, you know, it's not really something that's real. And I know that you end up with this extraordinary sort of conversation whereby you can't quite prove it, because all the information coming out from the media is telling you one thing, and then you're finding holes in it, and this person was here and he couldn't have been here because we know he was there, etc. So you can see it's a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. But the numbers are there. The numbers they like, in many ways, are 11, 13, 22, and 33. Sometimes there's a 44, sometimes there's a 7. And yes, sometimes you can put the numbers there that aren't there. So please don't do that. But you will notice that there are lots of numbers. And the classic one is 9/11, where you've got the two planes, the number 11 and the 175 plane. If you add those up and divide by 2, you get 93. And you've got the other plane, 93, which went into the Shanksville. And you've got 77, which is a famous sort of bad number mentioned with Lamech in the Old Testament in Genesis. All of these numbers are there. And 93 being the thelema number of Aleister Crowley. He, instead of writing, I am a thelema expert, or I'm a Satanist, at the end of their letters, they just put 93, mm-hmm. because in Gematria, thelema or agape, and there's another word, add up, IWAS, that's it, in the Hebrew Gematria, IWAS adds up to 93. And so instead of putting I'm a thelemic person on as their calling card, they just put the number 93. Mm-hmm. And so that's, there we have got it, all over 9/11. And I know it may be a little bit out there, but it is something that they're very keen to promote. They'll waste millions of pounds of money to make sure an event does take place on a specific day, like the 22nd of March, which is 322, yeah. Which is, yeah, Skull a special number. Yeah. No conspiracy there, then. I mean, you know, of course, it might have happened that it just happened to be on that day. But then a year later, they're doing another one, and it goes on.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And the thing is, I think in a lot of these events that people do really die. They, you know, they're not all fake deaths. There are some people that really die, but they still stage things and I don't know, you know,
yeah.
Get people that are perhaps pre-programmed witnesses and so on and so forth with their stories, which don't add up. And you know, a classic one, well, and then you get censored if you make a video about it. I got, you know, that happened with the shooting that was supposedly took place from Mandalay Bay, and I don't want to say too much about it here in case they ban this video as well. But, you know, that was Illuminati all over that. And it was just the most plainest thing to see. But, of course, you start putting the pieces together out there and then bang, down comes the censorship and the video gets banned or whatever. So,
yes. So if you're someone that doesn't believe in the hidden government and that everything is all a bit of a smokescreen and you think that what we're talking is untrue, go and look at some of these events that have happened. See if you can spot the numbers, because it ain't rocket science, is it? You can see them there.
Yeah, it's so absolutely. And yeah, that one, that was a classic, absolute classic. I can't remember all the numbers, but I published them, just so many of them at the time, right. You know, through various people helping me out, finding ones I hadn't even thought of. But they're just so beyond coincidence, it's not funny.
I'm going to look at that. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
So I want to, you know, move on to another, you know, away from that a little bit, to the United Nations and, you know, Theosophy and the writings of Alice A. Bailey, hugely influential on the United Nations and the meditation room and so on. Perhaps we could just, you know, spend a little bit of time on that. What do you know about that?
Well, yes, I mentioned the UN meditation room, which was started by Doug Hammarskjöld, who was very high up within the United Nations for about 40 years. And he wanted to start a room where all religions could join in. But if you or I were starting a room where all religions could join in, wouldn't we get a room and put a cross, put a crescent moon from Islam, and put the symbol of Hinduism there, put various symbols on the wall and have your little area? No, what they did is that they set up a huge, great sort of very strange big stone altar in the middle of this room, which is facing north, northeast, which is a Freemasonry, because the sun never gets to north, northeast. It's the darkest aspect that you can that there is. And that's why north faces are always, you know, they're always steeper than, you know, south faces, because the sun's been on them, eroding them. So, the Dag Hammarskjöld, he started the UN meditation room, and there was Sri Chinmoy, who was the New Age priest, who used to turn up and hold these extraordinary meetings there every week. And this room is administered by the Lucis Trust, which is directly in line with Alice A. Bailey's beliefs. In fact, she started the Lucis Trust back in 1922. So, yeah, we've got this meditation. There is this meditation room in the UN building in New York. And it is not Christianity. It is not any other religion. It is theosophy, really. And you can see it there. It's just quite extraordinary. So
it's interesting, too, that that room is actually laid out in the shape of a pyramid on its side without a capstone, which certainly isn't coincidental either.
I see. Yes. Well, that's the eye on the $1 bill, that triangular shape is the New World Religion coming down on top of the frustum of the unaccomplished work of the pyramid. So that's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, they were very instrumental in the United States right from the word go, all of these secret societies and so on with the New Atlantis.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. The New Atlantis, that's very interesting, because some of these concepts do go back to the 15th and 16th century. Thomas More, for example, with his universal income, he mentions that. And John Dee, he was a mystic who set up, that's where 007 comes from. He was an Enochian magician, and he helped to sort of form Rosicrucianism and Freemasonry. So it's all linked there, but that's going back a long way. But yeah, there is the UN room. There's also the Ark of Hope, which is the fake Ark of the Covenant that they made, and that also is there in the UN building. It's on each side. It's got various elements. You've got water, spirit, earth, air, fire, and inside where the tablets of the Ten Commandments should be, you've got the Earth Charter. And the Earth Charter is quite important because it's said to be the prototype of the New World Order Constitution. And in there you've got all of their principles about how they want to humanity to go forward under their sort of New Age banner. And so that is covered off in the book as well.
I didn't actually know about that. That's something I didn't know about, was the Ark of Hope. No, that's the first I've heard of that. So that's really interesting. So you've got some on that in the book.
Yes. It's towards the end, page 229. And they carried it after 9/11 from Vermont over to the New York building. And it was Stephen Rockefeller who carried it. That's Nelson Rockefeller's son, is Stephen Rockefeller. And he carried the Ark of Hope. Yeah. You see, it should have really been Maurice Strong. But who pays for it gets the glory. And Stephen Rockefeller, he carried, although it is Satan's glory. So there we have it inside the Ark of Hope. There is this extraordinary Earth Charter, which is really a kind of Fabianist, Marxist document with New Age principles.
Interesting, because Fabian socialism is a whole thing, you know, in itself, really, that permeates everything.
Yeah, this is the belief that slowly and imperceptibly they can take over society, never taking too big a step to awake people, but taking small steps so that they can bring us into their system. It was named after a Roman general who kind of developed some sort of terrorist technique of winning battles rather than just going to battle headlong. He'd just sort of take people off. You know, he was in North Africa, I think. Anyway, so
It's actually interesting too that the two mottos that the Fabian Socialists have, one is a wolf in sheep's clothing, which is like, you know, that should tell you straight off there's something amiss with them, and the other one is a tortoise, you know, which of course is a slow and creeping thing, you know, to, I think, symbolise the slow takeover of the socialists.
Yes, and in the Fabianist building, there's a stained glass window, and you've got George Bernard Shaw, I think. He's got a hammer, and he is hammering the earth, knocking it down, and it's being held in place by Bertrand Russell, I think. And they were two Fabianists who were quite friendly with Annie Besant, who was, after Alice Bailey, you've got Annie Besant, and then you've got... you've got Madame Blavatsky first, and then you've got Annie Besant, yeah, and then Alice A. Bailey. So it all links in there that the Fabianists were in with the Theosophists as well.
And what people don't realise too is they think of, say, the Rothschild family as being, you know, supremely capitalist, but they're actually been long-time supporters of Fabian socialism and indeed socialism, you know, all the way, really.
Absolutely.
So I think the sort of New World Order will be, it's kind of like a combination of communism, socialism, but with, you know, sort of super capitalists at the head of it.
Yes, well, the top people, they want to run the world like a corporation. Eventually they will only allow 500 million people to actually exist. And this is in numerous writings. And the Georgia Guidestones as well, it mentions the 500 million figure. And so they want to run the world like a corporation. So it'll be them dictating everything. And they'll only allow those people to exist who can manage whatever it is they want to do. So, yeah, it's a pretty scary future that the New World Order, you know, explains, but it is there in the writings, and it is unfortunately real. So we need to, you know, just keep our faith and keep going with Christ, believing in him, not being too upset about what's going on. For me, I just find it a bit laughable, really. And I have these conversations with my friends about things, but it slowly, everyone has a point. Everyone, you're not ready. Some people aren't ready. It takes time to get to that position to understand all of this. And if you're going too quick, it can be difficult to understand. But my book is a very good place to start, because although it's fairly theoretical in places, it does cover the full agenda in some good detail, and it's making links that you can look at and links to lots of other areas, like the Rees Committee, which I'm quite keen on, or you know, it talks about the economy. There are lots of political comments as well, and good quotes backing up everything, so that you can see what's going on.
And the Trilateral Commission and so on, you go into that, which is a huge part of all of this. The Bilderbergs and Trilateral and all of those groups are very, very instrumental in bringing all this about, and people just don't see it. The average person does not see what's really going on here. But I that's what I said right at the beginning. I think the way you've actually written the book and laid it out from what I've been reading, it's easy to understand. You've written it in a way that is easy for people to understand, which I think is a real strength of it.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. Well, I hope that you will enjoy reading it and learn things and, you know, research it, because it does take you to an interesting place to think that the Council on Foreign Relations and these other high-level groups would really be interested in building a new world religion is quite extraordinary. But if you think about it, you can't create a new society without a new creed. And that is what it's all about, how they're going to slowly shift us into this. So they're slowly graying out Christianity, graying out all the religions, moving them all in the same direction, talking about the Earth Mother pantheistic idea, and eventually swinging us over into their worship of the beast. That is what is going to happen. So it's there. Yeah.
And of course, Christianity is a big stumbling block. True Christianity, which says no, sorry, there's only salvation through Jesus Christ, as it says in the Book of Acts, you know, 4:12. We won't accept any other thing, you know. So we are the stumbling block, really.
Yeah, I think they are going to make us out to be absolutely dreadful. You know, but we need to stand our grounds and not give in to their pathetic, you know, twisted concepts. We're going to stand our ground and do what is right, follow God to the end. We're not going to bow down to their pathetic New World Order situation and the New World Religion. So yeah, but always, you know, we're people of faith. Our fight is not against physical things; it's against the principalities and powers in the high realm. So that is our job, to get on our knees and do spiritual warfare with Christ in mind. So it's not through us; it's not through our might, but through the power of God.
Absolutely, yes, I totally agree with that. So now, can you tell our listeners again the name of the book and where they can get it? And do you actually have a website or not?
I don't have a website, because I tried to do that before a long time ago, and I found it quite time-consuming, and I have got, you know, I'm very busy with my work and my family and everything. But yes, I have got a website to a degree. It's on Facebook. It's called The Regeneration, which is a reference to Matthew and the new Jerusalem. And it's on Facebook. So if you put the Regeneration New World REL being obviously being religion, short for religion. And I'm also on Twitter at New World REL as well. So there we go. And then the book itself is called The New World Religion and the Beliefs of the Elite. And so it goes into explaining some of the beliefs, Luciferianism being the main belief of the hidden government. And so it's available on Amazon, amazon.com or amazon.co.uk. It's about £12, the paperback. No, sorry, it's $12, and it's about £9 sterling. And you can also buy it on Kindle, obviously, and it's only about $5 on Kindle and £3.99. So I've tried to make it inexpensive, because I'm keen to get this information out there to everyone. And so, you know, it's very readily accessible, and I hope that you will read it.
And I think it's definitely worth it. Like I say, I've got the PDF copy. But I think it's probably worth getting the paperback, because I find, you know, PDF copies are great for looking for things you can reference online, you know, go, oh, where's a word, and type it in and find something. But paperback, you know, would be great for actually just reading it from cover to cover, I find. So, yeah, I would encourage people to get it. It looks like a well worthwhile book to read, and because, as you say, it's not too expensive either.
Thanks, Tony. Yes, it's there. I hope you'll read it, and I'm working on other things as well. So, yeah, it's been a pleasure to be on your show, Tony. Thanks very much.
And thank you, James. I'm sure we'll be talking again at some point. So it's been great to have you in this discussion with me today, and I hope our listeners will go out and get the book.
God bless you, Tony. Thank you very much.
And bless you too.
Okay.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye. Folks, don't forget to like and share this video if you're watching it on YouTube, and also subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't done so, and our blog, aminutetomidnight.com. Follow the website and bookmark it. We have a community forum on our website, aminutetomidnight.com. You can sign up and join in the discussions on the forum there if you like, and also an A Minute to Midnight Facebook group, which you are welcome to join as well. And also, we really appreciate any donations if you can help us to keep the show running. As a team, we appreciate all donations, and you can do that on our website, aminutetomidnight.com. And all the music is written, played, and recorded by me. And if you want to download free A Minute to Midnight music. You can do that on our website as well. And I think that's about it for this show. We will be back with another exciting episode of A Minute to Midnight in a few days' time. So until then, I want to say thank you for listening, and we will catch you in another show. And God bless until we do.